Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. You know whose theme song that is. It's our friend Troy Anderson. He is the pharmacist at Coborn's in Hastings. And oh my gosh, we are so excited to chat it up with him and hear what is new. Great to chat with you, Troy. How have you been?
Oh, just great. And it's always great to come on the air and talk to you about the important topics of the day.
Well, there are a lot of important topics of the day. And can I tell you, I think that you are so well respected, certainly in Hastings, and I know within your Coborn system. So I'm anxious to hear what you have to say. First of all, tell us how things are at Coborn's and how you've changed the way you do business.
Oh, well, I mean, I think we've about this, or you've seen it at other businesses where, you know, we have more barriers in place to protect people, more cleaning, we're wearing face masks, of course, everybody in Minnesota is now in public spaces. Just coping with that. It gets a little warmer with that, but we've got fans and such going in the pharmacy, and yeah, keep it going.
Keeping going. So tell us what you think about the best way to avoid getting sick with COVID or really any virus that's going around.
Well, these viruses are, you know, contracted by coming into contact with the virus and either having it enter through your eyes, nose, or mouth. So you could breathe in particles that somebody else expelled. You could touch a surface that has the particle on it and then, you know, touch your eyes, nose, or mouth, and then you could get it at that point. So, you know, just trying to avoid that touching, wearing the face mask. And also, they have the, you know, the social distancing thing. I really haven't done a whole lot the last 4 months, just kind of going from work to home and limited visits. I think a lot of people are anxious to get out and actually do things, but eventually this will pass, or we'll get a vaccine for it and go back to some normalcy.
You know, I like that. You gave us hope right there, saying that eventually this will pass or we'll have a vaccine. Let's talk about vaccines, please, because certainly in the not too distant past, there were some things like polio and that really wreaked havoc on America and certainly around the world. So vaccines are something that now are pretty mandatory, aren't they, for most kids?
Well, I know school requires shots and there's recommended shots for people to get, but some individuals are always, for one reason or another, believe that maybe there's a side effect that they are exposing themselves to that they don't need. And I think part of the problem is we haven't seen a pandemic like we have now where there's this big issue with the coronavirus and people are dying from it. We haven't seen that in so long. People don't understand how great it is to have these vaccines that can protect them from these illnesses. And so hopefully once we get through this and get an effective vaccine, people will kind of have a better understanding of how it works and how beneficial it is. You know, the polio generation saw the polio wiped out. Before there was a flu shot, you know, people were dying from the flu much more commonly, and when that became available, you know, everybody was happy to get it to prevent this unnecessary risk of getting the flu and dying from it from happening.
So that really is the reason to get a vaccine. Do you think that something like the coronavirus vaccine will be mandatory for school sometime?
Yeah, it's hard to say. They could definitely do that if they're going to have have the kids come into school and interact with each other. They could require a proof of the coronavirus vaccine if that's still circulating in the community. Because if there's a risk for transmission, then, you know, until that fades away, they wouldn't want any unnecessary risk of somebody that could carry it into the school and expose everybody else.
Troy, what do you think about the coronavirus? Is it going to be around forever? Is it something that really can be alleviated?
Well, the coronavirus has been around, you know, forever, but usually it just causes more or less the common cold. Now we have this coronavirus that's changed in a way where it's causing the severe acute respiratory symptoms, and that's leading to the more severe respiratory problems that are causing people to, you know, die from it. And this isn't the first time we've seen it. This is the SARS-CoV-2, so it's the second time we've seen this type of a virus emerge. The first time it emerged, it didn't spread throughout the globe. We've also seen that MERS one, where it's the Middle Eastern severe respiratory virus. So I think this is definitely going to become more common. Whether or not we contain it or learn enough from this experience to be able to keep it contained and then produce a vaccine even faster for this type of virus will be, you know, seen in the future.
And what makes this virus so tricky?
We haven't developed a vaccine for a coronavirus successfully before. So when you're going to make a vaccine, you got to make sure that, one, you know, it's stimulating Well, let's just talk about immunizations in general. So when we look at an immunization, what we're trying to do is take an antigen and put it into the body to produce or trick your immune system to attack it and practice on it, and that will confer immunity then to that infectious disease or whatever the antigen was from. So the antigen being the substance that induces the immune response. So what we want for this vaccine for coronavirus is to have an antigen based on coronavirus that we can put into somebody's, you know, body through an injection, and then that will stimulate their immune system, give it some practice. They will have some sort of a marker from that antigen that will help it identify coronavirus, this coronavirus, COVID-19, when it enters your body, and then they'll be able to target that with antibodies produced from the immunization.
So I know that people have been working on a vaccine for a while, and some people are saying, you know, what is taking so long? And then other people are saying, gosh, they're just rushing through this. I want to be the first person to get this vaccine.
So if we look back to 2009 when we had H1N1 going on, we had a vaccine out really darn quick after that because we make influenza virus vaccines all the time. Every year we get a new one. So all they had to do is identify it. They knew how to break it down and build a vaccine that would actually stimulate an antibody response in your body so it would be an effective vaccine and confer immunity. But now with the coronavirus, we're not entirely sure what the best markers are on that virus to stimulate immunity. So they have to kind of work through that scientific process of identifying what's the best way, what are the best markers to use as antigen in a vaccine from this coronavirus COVID-19 so that we can have an effective vaccine for it. So you probably heard in the news, you know, we're doing the phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 trials, yada, yada. What do those mean? How are they testing this? So part of the reason why, you know, it's not an immediate thing, one of them is the coronavirus is that new type of virus we have to build a vaccine to, but we have to go through each phase. So like when you're looking at, hear people talking about phase 1, they're taking a very small amount of people, 20 to 100 different people, and they're giving them the vaccine that they're hoping will be effective, and they're going to look at it over just a couple months, and they're going to make sure that the vaccine isn't causing any adverse reactions that's safe to use. They want to make sure that they give the correct dose, the correct amount of the antigen, so that they can stimulate the immune system to develop, give you immunity to coronavirus. So once that's done, they'll move on to phase 2, where they recruit a few hundred people. And what they're looking for now is they want to get varying age groups. So they're looking at children, middle-aged people, and then also the elderly. They want to make sure that not just the middle-aged group is getting effective immunity from the vaccine, but that everybody is going to be able to get immunity to coronavirus. Aside from that, they're also looking for any other side effects. When you have a large group of people, it might be possible to see other things emerge. So once you have those two done, you move down to phase 3, where we're going to grab somewhere between 300 and 3,000 people, say, and we're going to look at the kind of the same thing, make sure that the vaccine's still effective in this larger population size, make sure that there isn't any very low percentage chance adverse reactions that are severe, so we could either stop the vaccine at that point or continue forth with it. So once you get through that phase 3, then we get drug approval and people can start having access to a vaccine.
Is this something that you think that you would be able to minister at Coborn's?
I would imagine they're going to have as many locations administering them as they're able to get, because I imagine the demand will be quite high once it's available.
You know, we think about the flu season starting, what, in the fall and kind of going through maybe May. Is the coronavirus, the COVID-19 one, is that something that is year-round?
That's the question some people have. Is this going to be an ongoing vaccine we're going to need each year? Will it evolve and change with each season, and we'll have to continue to get a shot? It's hard to say at this point. Will it be the same virus? Will it be another one of the SARS viruses that they just target and they just start vaccinating automatically to try and prevent a pandemic? We'll see what happens in the future.
And why don't you think SARS came to the United States real heavily?
Well, part of the problem with this coronavirus is it's more contagious. It's spreading to more people. So when the first one popped out and somebody caught it, and even though it caused severe respiratory problems for them, it may not have been as contagious where it spreads to as many people. And that, of course, limits the extent of it and, you know, faster containment. This one, it was just a little more aggressive.
So what are you hearing through the grapevine about how much longer until we have a vaccine?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have a couple drug companies that are undergoing phase 3 clinical trials right now. So you've probably maybe heard in the news or read in some sort of paper, AstraZeneca, the University of Oxford are working together. They have a phase 3 trial underway. They believe that they may be able to deliver emergency use vaccines by October of this year. Moderna, another big name, is working on phase 3 trials. They just started that on July 27th. So they're working through those. Pfizer, BioNTech, and Fosun Pharma are working together on another vaccine in phase 3 trials as well. So they already have a contract with the U.S. to deliver 100 million doses by the end of this year, too. So hopefully at the very end of this year, we'll start to see some. Realistically, getting everybody vaccinated, though, it's not going to be till in 2021. There's too much demand.
And who do you think you would recommend as the first people to get vaccinations?
Definitely the elderly, as they're getting the most severe symptoms from this. If you look up the reports of how they measure the numbers, say in Minnesota at the Department of Health website, they break it down to people living in private residences and people at long-term care facilities. So definitely going to want to go for long-term care facilities. And also, as long as they have enough vaccines, you'd hope that they would give the higher-risk people a vaccine, people with any lung conditions like COPD, you know, asthma, also people with diabetes that could be at increased risk for complications.
You know, why is diabetes included? I understand the breathing thing because I know this attacks the lungs, but how does diabetes fit into this, please?
Yeah, diabetes, you know, is regulating the blood sugar in your body. So when you have too much blood glucose or blood sugar, it affects a lot of different systems throughout your body. And so you think it's not a big issue, but it can cause a lot of complications when combined with anything else. It really raises your risk for, you know, heart disease, which is also a risk factor for, you know, having complications from COVID.
So we are going to be heading into the flu season soon. What's that going to look like with coronavirus also?
Ooh, I can only imagine. It's going to be expensive. I think more expensive for people to go into the doctor for these things, because you're talking about, if you have the flu and it's flu season, you have, you know, a fever, muscle pain, general feeling of illness, headaches, a cough, sore throat, runny nose, and all those symptoms carry right over into what coronavirus shows, plus a couple others. So you're probably going to see multiple tests given, which could cost people more money. You have to wear all that extra protective equipment. Yeah, it's going to be a challenging one, I think, for healthcare providers this season to keep people differentiated, run the proper tests, and to try and get treatment without spreading coronavirus further while we wait for the vaccine to get around and get everybody immunized.
So they show up kind of similar in your body, the response to it, but what do you think is a good way to decide what we have, if it's the flu, if it's coronavirus, and how do you know if you should go to the doctor?
If you call into any of the clinics because you feel like you have symptoms, they're going to run you right through their own kind of personal screener, and then they'll have a protocol in place for how they're going to handle you to get you tested properly. But a lot of people are going to need to be tested probably for both because the symptoms are so closely matched.
So there's different kinds of flus I know as well. And last year, what flu were we worried about?
Well, the seasonal one that we worry about the most is the type A, but type B can also cause problems, but tends to circulate kind of year-round in the background and goes through long-term care facilities and special assisted livings just throughout the year. So each year they're going to make a recommendation from the World Health Organization and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. They'll see which kind of strains of influenza they think will be the most prevalent and the most problematic for our area in the coming season. And then once they make that recommendation, the vaccine manufacturers will start putting together those vaccines for us, which they'll probably be delivering here pretty soon.
Is that similar then to coronavirus vaccination? Are they going to have to figure out, or is that more specific?
Yeah, there's so much research that's needed still. It's hard to say. It could be if they are concerned about the mutation and evolution of the coronavirus or other viruses that are causing SARS. Then we could have kind of this pre-guidance to protect ourselves against it ahead of time. But until, we get more information about that, it's hard to say.
So what vaccinations do you think we should get now, and why is it important to be vaccinated?
Like we were talking about, so if you get vaccinated, then you have immunity to that illness. With the flu, it's that specific strain of influenza, but it mutates each season, so we have to keep getting a continual shot every single year. But this year with influenza, we finally had a little more guidance from the CDC. They are recommending that we get the vaccine in September or October this year don't get it early. They're saying if we get early in July or August, it could lead to reduced protection later in the season, so which could make you vulnerable to influenza. But I strongly, you know, recommend people get out in September and October and get that shot, because we're talking about a virus that is affecting your respiratory system just like coronavirus, and you don't want to end up getting both of them at the same time, which could happen. But this year there are some newer options available for vaccines. For people 65 and older, that old high-dose vaccine, last year I had to kind of explain to people, you know, the high-dose is a trivalent. It has three different strains of influenza, two type A, one type B. This year it's going to have four strains, so you're going to get 2A and 2B, just like the regular flu shot was last year. So you don't have to decide, do I want to get the regular dose with one extra or the high dose with one less. So now you can just get the high dose that has four times as much antigen in it to give you a better immune response to influenza. And a study has come out indicating that the high-dose vaccine is about 24% more effective in preventing flu compared to a standard dose. That's not the only option for people 65 and older. There's also Fluad, which is a quadrivalent or a four-strain one also. It is adjuvanted, which means they take a adjuvant and they put it into the vaccine, which further stimulates your immune system, gives you a stronger response. So rather than giving four times the antigen, they use this other ingredient that can do the kind of the same thing as having extra in there. The last option, some people could go for the FluMist nasal. That's going to be available this year too. But that's the live one that you get in the sinuses. You wouldn't want to get, or into the nose. You wouldn't want to get that if you're immunocompromised. I believe you can only get it up to age 49. There's a cutoff for it. Aside from that, I would highly recommend anybody that is at increased risk for any complications from COVID, you know, get your flu shot, but right now go and get your pneumonia shot. If you're less than 65 and you're a smoker, have COPD, asthma, heart disease, if you're immunocompromised, have diabetes or other long-standing chronic conditions, you could get a pneumonia shot that can reduce your risk of getting pneumonia, another respiratory issue that could complicate things if you get coronavirus or the flu. And last but not least, you know, get your booster on your tetanus shot every 10 years, which is kind of in the background because we don't get it that often. But then we still have the shingles shot that's available. Shingrix, super popular last year. I think we ran out for a time still at that point, and people were waiting because it's a two-shot series. It's only for people that are 50 years old and older, but it can lower your risk by up to 97% of getting shingles. And more importantly, you know, if you get shingles, you probably talk to people that have that pain that can linger afterwards, the post-herpetic neuralgia. It can lower your risk of getting that by up to 91%. And there's about a million people get shingles each year. So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, a good thing to get to prevent that pain from that one.
Great information, as always. Thank you, Troy. Troy Anderson, pharmacist at Coborn's. Get your vaccinations. And if they have any questions, they certainly can pop in and say hello to you with their mask on, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. And you can walk them through the right way. Thank you so much, Troy. Really, really great info. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.
This ain't a song for the broken hearted.